I am Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. Ride the snake, mojo rising. Oh my God, what's going on? Stacey Herbert, tell me more.
Max, you might as well fess up because you've been exposed as the Lizard King. The Lizard King is back, ADG UK. As you see from this photo, they took a photo of us. Apparently when we were in London, we've been exposed.
Oh, I love it, baby. You know, we are at the heart of all that is known in the universe. I went undercover as a reptile to verify some conspiracy theories coming out of David Icke. Apparently, there are reptilians running the world. According to this exclusive report, I had to shape-shape myself back to my normal form to come and do the show today.
There's lots of shape-shifting going on in the headlines today. Trustee to seize and liquidate the customer gold and silver bullion from MF Global. Yes, one day it's your gold and silver, the next day it's not. The trustee overseeing the liquidation of the failed brokerage MF Global has proposed dumping all remaining customer assets, gold, silver, cash, options, futures, and commodities into a single pool that would pay customers only 72% of the value of their holdings. In other words, while traders already may have paid the full price for the delivery of specific bars of gold or silver and hold warehouse receipts to prove it, they'll have to forfeit 28% of the value.
To me, this is the same thing as a run on the COMEX. It's the same thing. And let me break it to you, global audience. There's been a run at the COMEX. They don't have the inventory in New York to satisfy the claims. They don't got it. Therefore, ipso facto, gold and silver are in demand above and beyond what can be delivered by the market. This market is shattered.
Max, I have exclusive footage here from outside the COMEX. Here's some MF Global customers. As you see, they're very, I think that's from North Korea. Very similar looking footage, actually, from outside the COMEX. These are very upset customers, MF Global, especially those that own gold and silver bullion. One of them is John Rowe, a partner in BTR Trading, a Chicago futures trading firm. He says, warehouse receipts like gold bars are our property, 100%. We are a unique class, and instead, the trustee is doing a radical redistribution of property.
Well, the warehouse receipts are just fictitious claims on non-existent bullion. The same thing in the London Bullion Market Association in London. There are 100 ounces for every one that they supposedly have in storage has been loaned out or margined or hypothecated or rehypothecated or rehypothecated. It's just not there. It's all fantasy accounting. The gold and silver is not in these warehouse facilities. If you think you own this gold and silver, you're going to get a paper claim worth dollars that are becoming increasingly worthless.
That's one of the things, is there's this issue of allocated and unallocated gold and silver. And most people are told, whatever you do, make sure you get allocated gold if you're going to buy gold, because you want a receipt for the specific bar. Now, another story we covered last year, Max, was that Jeff Christian from the CPM Group, when testifying before the CFTC Group, said there was no issue with delivery from the COMEX because, at worst, though he mentioned that there were 10 bars of gold and silver trading for every single bar in existence there, or was it 100 to 1?
100 to 1.
100 to 1. And he said it wouldn't be an issue because we could just deliver in paper.
Well, of course. Yeah, well, it shows you the mentality of the people who are supposed to be the custodian of your precious metal. They think paper is equivalent to metal. Number two, this only adds credence to those who say that the COMEX and LBMA don't have the physical silver. Number three, if you have a receipt at the COMEX, it's worthless garbage. You need actual metal in a vault.
But here's an issue of this gold and silver property being sold off and you're getting a discount. But what's to say that couldn't be applied to the whole property market in the United States? What if somebody just shows up at your house and they've sold it because they said, Bank of America went bust? What if they seize Bank of America mortgage holders? What if they have to sell their houses in order to make good on all the bad debts of Bank of America?
That's exactly what's coming. It shows you that the derivatives traders, principally these banks, including Bank of America and other banks, have senior claim over you, even though you might have a receipt or you might have a segregated account. And combine that with Obama's new laws that are coming into place that give the American government the ability to throw anybody in jail that they don't like the color of the sweater they're wearing on any particular day. And there are no property laws left in the U.S. I mean, the U.S. is supposed to be built on this thing of private property and capitalism. Well, you need to have private property to have capitalism. You need to have capital to have capitalism. In America, you don't have capital because it's all fiat money debt claims tied to worthless concatenations of spewing out the Federal Reserve's backdoor receipts on future liabilities for 1,000 years that are put together and resecuritized by corrupt banks that are smoking crack all day, and you don't even have private property rights to go with it. So you're living in a frickin' prison over there.
You say you can't have capitalism without capital, and this is in the next headline as well. Revealed how city fees are eating into our pensions. Traders' hidden charges leaving pensioners and savers worse off, Treasury warned. So this is from the United Kingdom. Highly paid city traders are depriving pensioners and savers of thousands of pounds through high management fees that are often hidden, according to leaked advice provided by consultants to the Treasury. The charges are spreading and so steep that savers may find they get less back in retirement than they invested in savings accounts and pensions over their lifetime. The findings raise new questions about the Prime Minister's decision to veto a new EU treaty over his demands for greater protection for the city.
Well, city bankers are tapeworms, essentially. They live in your pension account. They're parasites, and they're eating it up. David Cameron, of course, chief parasite, chief tapeworm in residence over there at number 10 Downing Street. He provides cover for all his little tapeworm buddies. But he's the biggest tapeworm of all. That's why Europe kicked him out of the recent EU summit, because they don't want tapeworms at the table.
Well, David Cameron has insisted that the financial sector is a vital national interest, yet the consultants brought into the Treasury claimed that the often unnecessary charges built up by traders are damaging potential economic growth because, of course, they're scooping out the capital from the economy, and you can't have capitalism without capital.
Right. I mean, they should just round up a bunch of these tapeworms and take them public on the London Stock Exchange as Tapeworm LTD. And just have a company run entirely by and for tapeworms, put David Cameron as the CEO, and have that guy, Lord Sugar, as a consultant to David Cameron with the new Tapeworm Enterprises, because that's all the UK economies and the global economy is one big 1,000 debt to GDP ratio frickin' tapeworm.
I think it's Sir Alan Sugar, but listen, Max. The point that these consultants made to the Treasury was illustrated by the example of a saver who made £70,000 in contributions between 1994 and 2009, only to see the £46,000 in profit from the rise in the value of the FTSE 100 being consumed in its entirety by the financial services industry. So every single penny of profit you made on the rise in the FTSE went to bankers. But there's a cult in the UK where the population itself endorses Rupert Murdoch's position, and therefore David Cameron's, that these are godlike human beings, that only through them can we create economies and wealth.
Well, people in the UK have money in a pension account. Let's say the pension account is tied to the FTSE index, the FTSE 100, let's say. Well, what these bankers do, whether it's HSBC, Barclays, our Royal Bank of Scotland, Lloyd's, they take that index of 100 stocks and they buy and sell them every week. So at the end of the quarter, you have, yes, the FTSE 100 stocks in your portfolio, but you generated 25% of your equity in commissions. And then they'll say, well, you know, it's a fee that we need to support our lifestyle as frickin' tapeworms.
If you think there's going to be any justice about these tapeworms and these fraudsters in our economies, SEC charges ex-Fannie and Freddie chiefs. Six former top executives at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, including the former CEOs, have been charged with securities fraud in a civil case brought by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission for allegedly misleading investors. So becoming some of the most senior financial executives to face charges, but they only face fines of a fraction of the ill-gotten gains once again.
Right, because securities fraud is not considered a crime, it's considered the basis of the economy, whether it's the UK or the US. Securities fraud is the main contributor to GDP growth. So it's not a crime because it's the it's the raison d'etre of these economies, is to aid and abet securities fraud.
Well, according to the civil suit, the SEC is alleging that, like, Freddie Mac, for example, claimed to the public and shareholders that they only had $2 to $6 billion in exposure to subprime mortgages, when in fact they had $141 to $244 billion. So the size of their lies, while they themselves were scooping out bonuses based on their profits, their alleged profits, is, of course, you know, massive.
Well, the bonuses are based on the entire balance sheet, including the off-balance sheet items that they don't disclose at the quarterly SEC requirement. So their off-balance sheet items might be worth $100 billion or $150 billion. And they say, well, we have a 1% bonus or 2% or 5% bonus based on the entire balance sheet. But, oh, by the way, when it comes to disclose the risk at the end of the quarter, we're not going to include anything off the balance sheet. We're going to only include a very fractional, minute amount of our balance sheet on our actual balance sheet to the regulators at the end of the quarter. And since we don't have any of that debt on our balance sheet, we made record profits again. The stock price is up at new highs. Our options just hit new highs. We just made another huge multi-billion dollar bonus because A, we didn't disclose the liabilities of our company. That's illegal. B, we paraded around as a quasi-U.S. institution, which in fact we're not. It's a purely private institution, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and that's another law-breaking incident right there. And three, we took all of the money that we stole from all the shareholders and all the citizens and all the taxpayers, and we invested it and reinvested it in rehypothecation scams that also are illegal.
And finally, Max, Eurozone crisis, Foreign Office plans evacuation of expatriates. So this is from the UK Foreign Office, and they claim that they're going to, if the Spanish and Portuguese banks collapse, we're going to rescue the British citizens living there. But my question is, why not rescue the British citizens living in your own country from the crimes of the city?
Right. Why doesn't the government want to rescue the British citizens from the crimes committed in the city?
Exactly. As we've just showed, like, billions and billions and trillions of pounds are being stolen from pension funds right now, today, from pension holders.
Well, here's the joke of it all. This whole euro crisis is now moving over the channel and is going to attack the City of London and the gilt market in the UK in another 3 months. It'll be talked about whether or not the UK needs IMF bailout like they did back in the 70s. All right, you Marmite and Chilele stick-wielding psychopaths, it's back to the IMF bailout time. Stacey Herbert, thanks so much for being on the Kaiser Report.
Thank you, Max.
Don't go away. Much more coming your way, so stay right there. Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. Time now to go down under, talk with Steve Keen. He's got his new book, of course, Debunking Economics, and I hope you bought a copy, not only for yourself, but these make excellent Christmas gifts. But everyone you know on your list should get this book that explains why things are so screwed up. Now, the book is also available for download on Kindle. It's called Debunking Economics, The Naked Emperor Dethroned. If you want to follow Steve's work, his website is debtdeflation.com. Steve Keen, welcome back to the Kaiser Report.
Lovely to be here, Max.
All right, Steve Keen, your area of expertise, amongst others, is the Minsky moment. Now, recently, Mark Carney, head of the Central Bank of Canada, used this exact phrase. So tell us what the Minsky moment is. What is the significance of the central bank governor using it?
Well, the Minsky moment is a point where you go from a period where private debt's been rising over time, and rising private debt finances a higher level of economic activity than you can do just with income alone. You get to the point where you've accumulated so much debt that that simply becomes impossible. Debt stops rising. And as soon as the change in debt goes from being positive to negative, suddenly debt, which used to add to demand, starts subtracting from demand, and you're in a whole new ball game where what actually drives the economy is not rising debt driving it up, but reducing debt, deleveraging, and driving it down. And the significance of a central banker mentioning this is central bankers, coming from a mainly neoclassical background, argue that the level of private debt doesn't matter. It's just the distribution that matters. Well, here's Carney coming out and saying, no, the aggregate level of debt matters. And when the debt is falling, that matters even more, because that means we're in a deleveraging environment. So he actually titled his talk, Growth in the Era of Deleveraging. And I think that was it deserved a bit of an accolade for central banking. That's really innovative thinking.
All right, now to give an example of this absence of the inclusion of private debt in economic analysis, let's look at the UK for a second, because the UK was recently revealed to have close to 1,000% of their GDP in debt. 600% of that is in the banking sector, private debt. That's private debt, the banking sector debt. But talk about the UK for a second. Is that correct that pretty much people omit that private debt and it should be included, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole idea that you can try to model capitalism without including money and debt in your models, and that's 99.9% of neoclassical models include neither money nor debt, is a bit like trying to model how a bird flies by assuming that it doesn't have wings. It's just ridiculous that it's left out. And they do it from a piece of classical, neoclassical a priori logic. They start by saying, oh, well, debt is simply a person saving money lending a person who's borrowing money. So when the lender saves, his spending power goes down. When the borrower borrows, his spending power goes up. The two cancel each other out. Overall, there's no macroeconomic impact. That is totally ignorant of the way in which money is created in the modern financial sector, which is simply debts create money, banks create money by creating debt. No saver has to go without for a debt to be created. That's just a myth from asinine, half-baked neoclassical thinking about the economy in the absence of any knowledge of the actual empirical reality of the economy. So what actually happens in the real world is rising debt, which is endogenously expanded by the banking sector, finances expenditure, and if that expenditure is on new investments, new factories, innovation, that's good. That's what I call Schumpeterian debt, which is good stuff. But when it finances gambling on rising asset prices, that's what Minsky called Ponzi finance, and that's disastrous. Now, of course, there'll be a limit to how much money you'll borrow for an investment because you are going to be basing your expectations of whether it's worth getting into that debt on what you expect to make in profit in the future out of genuinely selling new widgets to people. So you've got to make some sort of estimation of what you think you can make in income out of that. But if you believe you're going to get money by selling an asset on a rising market, you'll borrow to the bloody hills. And that's what actually has happened. And the banking sector happily finances that. Now, I am totally gobsmacked that figure that you've quoted to me is correct. I've seen figures saying it's 450% of GDP, English the financial sector's debt. 600% is just, I'm stunned, because America's prior crisis began with a level of financial sector debt of 120% of GDP. So we're talking a level of debt that's four, possibly even five times as high as the level that caused the catastrophe in the United States. When the shit hits the fan in England, it's going to be some pretty serious shit.
Yes, well, I mean, it makes sense, though, when you consider now we know, when you take on board all the machinations of the MF Global scandal, because of the loophole in the regulatory environment of the UK, which allowed for infinite rehypothecation with no limits whatsoever on rehypothecation. And it's the ground zero for the MF Global scandal, Lehman Brothers, Bernie Madoff, as well as a couple of other of these major league scandals. All of that debt that was used to finance all those scandals are on the balance sheet of these UK banks, which, of course, we know from experience is going to end up on the balance sheet of the government, and the government is going to then impose further austerity measures to pay off this debt, correct?
Well, I think actually the government might shoot itself in the foot with austerity figures before it actually reaches that point, because, I mean, it's still incredible that the crisis hasn't hit the banking sector with the debt level of, you know, between 450 and 600% of GDP. We're talking Iceland type figures there and beyond in some ways. But what you've got is Cameron imposing austerity now to supposedly stimulate the economy. This another bizarre neoclassical invention they used to call reverse Ricardian equivalence, and now they're trying to make it sound more intelligent by calling it expansionary fiscal consolidation. Absolute nonsense, whichever way you describe it. Of course, that's not working, and the economy is falling in size, so actually they're discrediting austerity before you've had the banking crisis you simply have to have.
Let me cut in here for a second, because let's give a hard example of exactly how this debunking economics is, you know, that you write about is so important. Because in a recent study that came out, an article in the Financial Times, I believe, it said that, well, you know, yes, Britain has debt close to 1,000% GDP. However, it's growing faster than a country like France. But that's really poppycock, isn't it? Because that growth is tied entirely to debt, which is entirely specious and is on the verge of collapsing per a Minsky moment that even the Canadian central bank head is warning the global system about. So to say that they have any growth at all, it's not organic growth. It's pure debt-fueled growth, and that debt is completely unsustainable, correct?
It's simply saying, hey, listen, our economy is doing better than your economy because our Ponzi scheme is growing faster than your real economy.
Yeah, exactly. So they're saying that they deserve a AAA rating from various rating agencies because they've got a more successful Ponzi scheme at the moment. Now, Mark Carney was famously the head of the Canadian Central Bank who made this comment about the Minsky moment. Last summer, he was berated by J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon. Dimon was whinging on about needed more leverage that was tried in Canada or else the financial system would crash. And we should mention that only in Canada, the MF Global customers were made whole because their regulations covered the kind of excesses that we saw in the US and the UK. So here I have Jamie Dimon lecturing a central bank governor on the need to reduce equity from the system. Is Jamie Dimon an egregious, self-serving banking fraud peddler as it seems, Steve Keen?
What they're always saying is, look, our scheme will work as long as you let us continue having even more Ponzi behavior than we had last week. Of course, that sort of scheme works until it collapses, and collapses spectacularly. And the trouble is characters, you know, like Jamie Dimon are going to abscond with the money in the meantime. And so I couldn't have possibly seen this coming. I mean, it is so blatantly obvious that this is going to end in tears. And these guys, by delaying it, is simply making it going from a trickle of tears to a flood. So yeah, he's a total. That's total Ponzi merchant behavior, and I'm glad to see Carney and the Canadians standing up to that sort of intimidation from the banking sector.
All right, now speaking of Jamie Dimon, he's featured in a Bloomberg article. Quote: "Bankers seek to debunk imbecile attack on the top 1%." Hey, he's stealing your phrase, debunking. If there's any debunking, it needs to be debunking economics. It's the subject of this excellent book, which I suggest you buy for Christmas. But Dimon claims that the Occupy Wall Street movement is just jealous of his success. Now, let's examine that for a second, because here's a known financial terrorist. He has absconded with taxpayer money into hundreds of billions of dollars. He employs illegal tax dodging and security dodging techniques every single day of his life. He breaks the law while he's sleeping. But he says people are jealous of this. Well, how can that be? I mean, people are jealous of criminals? Is that what he's saying?
This whole thing about jealousy, for a start, the people who got involved in Occupy Wall Street, movements like that, some of them the old classic lefties, no argument against that. You get plenty of the socialist workers' party and all that mob turning up there. But fundamentally, the people are there because they feel their trust in banking has been betrayed. And they want a world in which trust rules. And of course, what we're seeing with behavior like the banks, the sort of behavior that Dimon and co push, is where trust is abused. You can't justify a salary of $23 million for one person, let alone the rest of the money they heap onto themselves. Nobody earns that money if they're anything less than Einstein, and there's no way these guys are Einstein. They are simply the top of a Ponzi scheme that's making money by causing asset prices to rise by leveraging up the prices with the level of debt they're creating and creaming off some of the debt on the way up. It's totally unproductive, totally destructive behavior. And this is what's brought the financial system to its, well, what the global economy to its heels. And that's before England falls over.
I'm not sure Einstein made a ton of money, but what Einstein regretted was the use of his ideas of E equals MC squared to create atomic bombs. And the ideas of derivatives that were first started in the 70s as a way to manage risk have turned into atomic financial bombs that are being wielded by the likes of Jamie Dimon. And of course, David Cameron is a complete nincompoop in this arena. He has absolutely no idea between an income statement and a bowl full of avocados. But he continues to preach that the financial sector is really important to the UK economy. What would happen if the UK economy and the City of London suddenly started to obey the law? Would the UK economy crash immediately, or would it crash over a period of a few months?
I think about 3.5 minutes. I mean, if you're talking a debt level of 600% of GDP, you're so dependent upon that debt level rising to keep the entire mechanics of leveraging up going forward, and, you know, maintaining those astronomical house prices in London and the salaries that those guys are used to raking off from the top of debt. As soon as that turns in from growth to decline, That's got to be the biggest downturn in this financial crisis, because it dwarfs anything that's happened in America so far, to go from that level of debt to suddenly a debt not growing anymore. So when it hits, it should hit incredibly quickly. And of course, the classic thing is, if you said yourself brilliantly just recently, the basis of the English financial success is fraud, everything from, you know, AIG all the way through. When people start losing money because of fraud, they're the first ones to jump ship. So as soon as this thing turns in the wrong direction, the fraud that's being feeding the English system will suddenly try to escape in the opposite direction, and they'll have the most enormous credit crunch. So that's why I reckon 3.5 minutes after it turns, that's when the economy will collapse.
All right, Steve Keen, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being on the Kaiser Report.
Okay, mate. It was great fun as usual.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert. I want to thank my guest, Steve Keen from Australia, the author of this classic, instant classic, Debunking Economics. If you want to send me an email, please do so at kaiserreport@rttv.ru. Until next time, Max Kaiser saying bye, y'all.